him taken unto the castle. Removing the boy from the city was one of his sister's better notions, Tyrion had decided. At Rosby, Tommen would be safe from the mob, and keeping him apart from his brother also made things more difficult for Stannis. Even if he took King's Landing and executed Joffrey, he'd still have a Lannister claimant to contend with. Lord Giles is too sickly to run and too craven to fight. He'll command his castellan to open the gates. Once inside the walls, Bywater is to expel the garrison and hold Tommen there safe. Ask him how he likes the sound of Lord Bywater. Lord Bronn would sound better. I could grab the boy for you just as well. I'll dandle him on my knee and sing him nursery songs, if there's a lordship in it. I need you here, said Tyrion, and I don't trust you with my nephew. Should any ill befall Joffrey, the Lannister claim to the Iron Throne would rest on Tommen's young shoulders. Sir Jaslyn's gold cloaks would defend the boy. Bronn's sellswords were more apt to sell him to his enemies. What should the new lord do with the old one? Whatever he pleases, so long as he remembers to feed him. I don't want him dying. Tyrion pushed away from the table. My sister will send one of the king's guard with the prince. Bronn was not concerned. The hound is Joffrey's dog. He won't leave him. Ironhand's gold cloaks should be able to handle the others easy enough. If it comes to killing, tell Sir Jaslyn I won't have it done in front of Tommen. Tyrion donned a heavy cloak of dark brown wool. My nephew is tender-hearted. Are you certain he's a Lannister? I'm certain of nothing but winter and battle, he said. Come, I'm riding with you part of the way. Shatayas, you know me too well. They left through a postern gate in the north wall. Tyrion put his heels into his horse and clattered down Shadow Black Lane. A few furtive shapes darted into alleys at the sound of hoofbeats on the cobbles, but no one dared accost them. The council had extended his curfew. It was death to be taken on the streets after the evenfall bells had sung. The measure had restored a degree of peace to King's Landing and quartered the number of corpses found in the alleys of a morning. Yet Varys said the people cursed him for it. They should be thankful they have the breath to curse. A pair of gold cloaks confronted them as they were making their way along Coppersmith's Wynd, but when they realized whom they challenged, they begged the hand's pardons and waved them on. Bronn turned south for the Mudgate, and they parted company. Tyrion rode on towards Chitaya's, but suddenly his patience deserted him. He twisted in the saddle, scanning the street behind. There were no signs of followers. Every window was dark or tightly shuttered. He heard nothing but the wind swirling down the alleys. If Cersei had someone stalking me tonight, he must be disguised as a rat. Bugger it all, he muttered. He was sick of caution. Wheeling his horse around, he dug in his spurs. If anyone's after me, we'll see how well they ride. He flew through the moonlit streets, clattering over cobbles, darting down narrow alleys and up twisting winds, racing to his love. As he hammered on the gate, he heard music wafting faintly over the spiked stone walls. One of the Ebonese ushered him inside. Tyrion gave the man his horse and said, "Who is that?" The diamond-shaped panes of the long-hall windows shone with yellow light, and he could hear a man singing. The Ebonese shrugged. Fat belly singer. The sound swelled as he walked from the stable to the house. Tyrion had never been fond of singers, and he liked this one even less than the run of the breed, sight unseen. When he pushed open the door, the man broke off. My lord Hand. He knelt, balding and kettle-bellied, murmuring. An honor, an honor. My lord, Shay smiled at the sight of him. He liked that smile. The quick, unthinking way it came to her pretty face. The girl wore her purple silk, belted with a cloth of silver sash. The colors favored her dark hair and the smooth cream of her skin. Sweetling, he called her. And who is this? The singer raised his eyes.
I am called Simon Silvertongue, my lord. A player, a singer, a tale-teller.
And a great fool, Tyrion finished.
What did you call me when I entered?
Call?
I only...
The silver in Simon's tongue seemed to have turned to lead.
My lord Hand, I said an honour...
A wiser man would have pretended not to recognise me. Not that I would have been fooled, but you ought to have tried.
What am I to do with you now, eh?
You know of my sweet Shay. You know where she dwells. You know that I visit by night alone.
I swear I'll tell no one.
On that much we agree. Good night to you. Tyrion led Shay up the stairs. My singer may never sing again now, she teased. You've scared the voice from him. A little fear will help him reach those high notes. She closed the door to their bedchamber. You won't hurt him, will you? She lit a scented candle and knelt to pull off his boots.
His songs cheer me on the nights you don't come.
Would that I could come every night, he said, as she rubbed his bare feet.
How well does he sing?
Oh, better than some. Not so good as others. Tyrion opened her robe and buried his face between her breasts. She always smelled clean to him, even in this reeking sty of a city.
Keep him if you like, but keep him close. I won't have him wandering the city spreading tales in pot shops.
He won't, she started. Tyrion covered her mouth with his own. He'd had talk enough. He needed the sweet simplicity of the pleasure he found between Shay's thighs. Here, at least, he was welcome, wanted. Afterward, he eased his arm from under her head, slipped on his tunic, and went down to the garden. A half-moon silvered the leaves of the fruit trees and shone on the surface of the stone bathing pond. Tyrion seated himself beside the water. Somewhere off to his right, a cricket was chirping, a curiously homey sound.
It is peaceful here, he thought. But for how long?
A whiff of something rank made him turn his head. Shay stood in the door behind him, dressed in the silvery robe he'd given her. I loved a maid as white as winter, with moon glow in her hair. Behind her stood one of the begging brothers, a portly man in filthy patched robes, his bare feet crusty with dirt. A bowl hung about his neck on a leather thong where a septon would have worn a crystal. The smell of him would have gagged a rat.
Lord Varys has come to see you, Shay announced.
The begging brother blinked at her, astonished. Tyrion laughed.
To be sure. How is it you knew him when I did not?
She shrugged.
It's still him, only dressed different.
A different look, a different smell, a different way of walking, said Tyrion. Most men would be deceived.
And most women may be, but not whores. A whore learns to see the man, not his garb. Or she turns up dead in an alley.
Varys looked pained, and not because of the four scabs on his feet. Tyrion chuckled.
Shay, would you bring us some wine?
He might need a drink. Whatever brought the eunuch here in the dead of night was not like to be good.
I almost fear to tell you why I've come, my lord, Varys said when Shay had left them. I bring dire tidings.
You ought to dress in black feathers, Varys. You're as bad an omen as any raven.
Awkwardly, Tyrion pushed to his feet, half afraid to ask the next question.
Is it Jaime? If they have harmed him, nothing will save them.
No, my lord, a different matter. Sir Courtenay Penrose is dead. Storm's End has opened its gates to Stannis Baratheon.
Dismay drove all other thoughts from Tyrion's mind. When Shay returned with the wine, he took one sip and flung the cup away to explode against the side of the house. She raised a hand to shield herself from the shards as the wine ran down the stones in long fingers, black in the moonlight.
Damn him!
Tyrion said. Varys smiled, showing a mouthful of rotted teeth.
Who, my lord, Sir Courtenay or Lord Stannis?
Both of them.
Storm's End was strong,
It should have been able to hold out for half a year or more, time enough for his father to finish with Robb Stark. How did this happen?
Varys glanced at Shay. My lord, must we trouble your sweet lady's sleep with such grim and bloody talk?
A lady might be afraid, said Shay, but I'm not.
You should be, Tyrion told her.
With Storm's End fallen, Stannis will soon turn his attention toward King's Landing. He regretted flinging away that wine now. Lord Varys, give us a moment, and I'll ride back to the castle with you.
I shall wait in the stables.
He bowed and stomped off. Tyrion drew Shay down beside him. You are not safe here.
I have my walls and the guards you gave me.
Sell swords, Tyrion said. They like my gold well enough, but will they die for it? As for these walls, a man could stand on another's shoulders and be over in a heartbeat. A manse, much like this one, was burned during the riots. They killed the goldsmith who owned it for the crime of having a full larder, just as they tore the High Septon to pieces, raped Lollies 50 times, and smashed her Aaron's skull in. What do you think they would do if they got their hands on the Hand's Lady?
The Anne's whore, you mean?
She looked at him with those big, bold eyes of hers.
Though I would be your lady, my lord. I'd dress in all the beautiful things you gave me, in satin and samite and cloth of gold, and I'd wear your jewels and hold your hand and sit by you at feasts. I could give you sons, I know I could, and I vow I'll never shame you.
My love for you shames me enough. A sweet dream, Shay. Now, put it aside, I beg you, it can never be.
Because of the Queen? I'm not afraid of her either.
I am.
Then kill her and be done with it. It's not as if there was any love between you.
Tyrion sighed. She's my sister. The man who kills his own blood is cursed forever in the sight of gods and men. Moreover, whatever you and I may think of Cersei, my father and brother hold her dear. I can scheme with any man in the Seven Kingdoms, but the gods have not equipped me to face Jaime with swords in hand.
The young wolf and Lord Stannis have swords, and they don't scare you.
How little you know, sweetling. Against them I have all the power of Haas Lannister. Against Jaime, or my father, I have no more than a twisted back and a pair of stunted legs.
You have me.
Shay kissed him, her arm sliding around his neck as she pressed her body to his. The kiss aroused him, as her kisses always did. But this time, Tyrion gently disentangled himself. Not now, sweetling. I have, well, call it the seed of a plan. I think I might be able to bring you into the castle kitchens.
Shay's face went still. The kitchens?
Yes, if I act through Varys, no one will be the wiser. She giggled.
My lord, I'd poison you. Every man who's tasted my cooking has told me what a good whore I am.
The Red Keep has sufficient cooks, butchers and bakers too. You need to pose as a scullion.
A park girl, she said, in scratchy brown rough spun. Is that how my lord wants to see me?
My lord wants to see you alive, Tyrion said. You can scarcely scour putts in silk and velvet.
Has my lord grown tired of me?
She reached a hand under his tunic and found his cock. In two quick strokes, she had it hard.
He still wants me, she laughed. Would you like to fuck your kitchen wench, my lord? You can dust me with flour and suck gravy off my titties if you...
Stop it! The way she was acting reminded him of Dancy, who had tried so hard to win her wager. He yanked her hand away to keep her from further mischief. This is not the time for bed sport, Shay. Your life may be at stake. Her grin was gone.
If I've displeased my lord, I never meant it. Only, couldn't you just give me more guards?
Tyrion breathed a deep sigh.
Remember how young she is,
he told himself. He took her hand. Your gems can be replaced, and new gowns can be sewn twice as lovely as the old. To me, you're the most precious thing within these walls. The Red Keep is not safe either, but it's a deal safer than here. I want you there. In the kitchens, a voice was flat, scouring pots. For a short while. My father made me his kitchen wench, she said, her mouth twisting. That was why I ran off. You told me you ran off because your father made you his whore, he reminded her. That too. I didn't like scouring his pots no more than I liked his cock in me. She tossed her head. Why can't you keep me in your tower? Half the lords at court keep bed warmers. I was expressly forbidden to take you to court. By your stupid father, Shay pouted. You're old enough to keep all the horns you want. Does he take you for a beardless boy? What could he do? Spank you? He slapped her. Not hard, but hard enough. Damn you, he said. Damn you. Never mock me. Not you. For a moment, Shay did not speak. The only sound was the cricket, chirping, chirping. Beg pardon, my lord, she said at last, in a heavy wooden voice. I never meant to be impudent. And I never meant to strike you, gods be good, am I turning into Cersei? That was ill done, he said, on both our parts. Shay, you do not understand. Words he had never meant to speak came tumbling out of him like mummers from a hollow horse. When I was 13, I wed a crofter's daughter, or so I thought her. I was blind with love for her, and thought she felt the same for me, but my father rubbed my face in the truth. My bride was a whore Jamie had hired to give me my first taste of manhood. And I believed all of it, fool that I was. To drive the lesson home, Lord Tywin gave my wife to a barracks of his guardsmen to use as they pleased, and commanded me to watch and to take her one last time after the rest were done. One last time, with no trace of love or tenderness remaining. So you will remember her as she truly is, he said. And I should have defied him, but my cock betrayed me, and I did as I was bid. After he was done with her, my father had the marriage undone. It was as if we had never been wed, the Septon said. He squeezed her hand. Please, let's have no more talk of the Tower of the Hand. You will be in the kitchens only a little while. Once we're done with Stannis, you'll have another manse and silks as soft as your hands. Shay's eyes had grown large, but he could not read what lay behind them. My hands won't be soft if I clean ovens and scrape plates all day. Will you still want them touching you when they're all red and raw and cracked from hot water and lye soap? More than ever, he said. When I look at them, they'll remind me how brave you were. He could not say if she believed him. She lowered her eyes. I'm yours to command, my lord. It was as much acceptance as she could give tonight. He saw that plain enough. He kissed her cheek where he'd struck her to take some sting from the blow. I will send for you. Varys was waiting in the stables, as promised. His horse looked spavined and half dead. Tyrion mounted up. One of the sellswords opened the gates. They rode out in silence. Why did I tell her about Tysha? God's help me, he asked himself, suddenly afraid. There were some secrets that should never be spoken, some shames a man should take to his grave. What did he want from her? Forgiveness? The way she had looked at him, what did that mean? Did she hate the thought of scarring pots that much? Or was it his confession? How could I tell her that and still think she would love me? Part of him said, and another part mocked, saying, fool of a dwarf. It's only the gold and jewels the whore loves. His scarred elbow was throbbing, jarred every time the horse set down a hoof. Sometimes
He could almost fancy he heard the bones grinding together inside. Perhaps he should see a maester, get some potion for the pain. But since Pycelle had revealed himself for what he was, Tyrion Lannister mistrusted the maesters. The guards only knew who they were conspiring with, or what they had mixed in those potions they gave you. "Varys," he said, "I need to bring Shae into the castle without Cersei becoming aware." Briefly, he sketched out his kitchen scheme. When he was done, the eunuch made a little clucking sound.
"I will do as my lord commands, of course, but I must warn you, the kitchens are full of eyes and ears. Even if the girl falls under no particular suspicion, she will be subject to 1,000 questions. Where was she born? Who were her parents? How did she come to King's Landing? The truth will never do, so she must lie, and lie, and lie." He glanced down at Tyrion. "And such a pretty young kitchen wench will incite lust as well as curiosity. She will be touched, pinched, patted, and fondled. Potboys will crawl under her blankets of a night. Some lonely cook may seek to wed her. Bakers will knead her breasts with floured hands."
"I'd sooner have her fondled than stabbed," said Tyrion. Varys rode on a few paces and said,
"It might be that there is another way. As it happens, the maidservant who attends Lady Tender's daughter has been filching her jewels. Were I to inform Lady Tender, she would be forced to dismiss the girl at once, and the daughter would require a new maidservant."
"I see." This had possibilities, Tyrion saw at once. A lady's bedmaid wore finer garb than a scullion, and often even a jewel or two. Shae should be pleased by that. And Cersei thought Lady Tender tedious and hysterical, and Lollies a bovine lackwit. She was not like to pay them any friendly calls.
"Lollies is timid and trusting," Varys said. "She will accept any tale she's told. Since the mob took her maidenhead, she is afraid to leave her chambers. So Shae will be out of sight, but conveniently close, should you have need of comfort."
"The Tower of the Hand is watched, you know as well as I. Cersei would be certain to grow curious if Lolly's bedmaid started paying me calls."
"I might be able to slip the child into your bedchamber unseen. Shatayas is not the only house to boast a hidden door."
"A secret access? To my chambers?" Tyrion was more annoyed than surprised. Why else would Maegar the Cruel have ordered death for all the builders who had worked on his castle, except to preserve such secrets?
"Yes, I suppose there would be. Where will I find the door? In my solar? My bedchamber?" "My friend, you would not force me to reveal all my little secrets, would you?"
"Henceforth, think of them as our little secrets, Varys." Tyrion glanced up at the eunuch in his smelly mummer's garb. "Assuming that you are on my side."
"Can you doubt it?"
"Why, no. I trust you implicitly." A bitter laugh echoed off the shuttered windows. "I trust you like one of my own blood, in truth. Now tell me how Courtney Penrose died."
"It is said that he threw himself from a tower."
"Threw himself? No, I will not believe that."
"His guards saw no man enter his chambers, nor did they find any within afterward."
"Then the killer entered earlier and hid under the bed," Tyrion suggested. "Or he climbed down from the roof on a rope. Perhaps the guards are lying. Who's to say they did not do the thing themselves?"
"Doubtless you are right, my lord."
His smug tone said otherwise. "But you do not think so. How was it done, then?" For a long moment, Varys said nothing. The only sound was the stately clack of horseshoes on cobbles. Finally, the eunuch cleared his throat.
My lord, do you believe in the old powers?
Magic, you mean? Tyrion said impatiently. Blood spells, curses, shape-shifting, those sort of things? He snorted. Do you mean to suggest that Sir Courtney was magic to his death?
Sir Courtney had challenged Lord Stannis to single combat on the morning he died. I ask you, is this the act of a man lost to despair? Then there is the matter of Lord Renly's mysterious and most fortuitous murder, even as his battle lines were forming up to sweep his brother from the field. The eunuch paused a moment. My lord, you once asked me how it was that I was cut.
I recall, said Tyrion. You did not want to talk of it.
Nor do I. But...
This pause was longer than the one before, and when Varys spoke again, his voice was different somehow.
I was an orphan boy, apprenticed to a travelling folly. Our master owned a fat little cog, and we sailed up and down the narrow sea, performing in all the free cities, and from time to time in Old Town and King's Landing. One day, at Myr, a certain man came to our folly. After the performance, he made an offer for me that my master found too tempting to refuse. I was in terror. I feared the man meant to use me as I had heard men use small boys. But in truth, the only part of me he had need of was my manhood. He gave me a potion that made me powerless to move or speak, yet did nothing to dull my senses. With a long hooked blade, he sliced me root and stem, chanting all the while. I watched him burn my manly parts on a brazier. The flames turned blue, and I heard a voice answer his call, though I did not understand the words they spoke. The mummers had sailed by the time he was done with me. Once I had served his purpose, the man had no further interest in me, so he put me out. When I asked him what I should do now, he answered that he supposed I should die. To spite him, I resolved to live. I begged, I stole, and I sold what parts of my body still remained to me. Soon I was as good a thief as any in Myr, and when I was older, I learned that often the contents of a man's letters are more valuable than the contents of his purse. Yet I still dream of that night, my lord, not of the sorcerer, nor his blade, nor even the way my manhood shriveled as it burned. I dream of the voice from the flames. Was it a god, a demon, some conjurer's trick? I could not tell you, and I know all the tricks. All I can say for a certainty is that he called it, and it answered. And since that day, I have hated magic and all those who practice it. If Lord Stannis is one such, I mean to see him dead.
When he was done, they rode in silence for a time. Finally, Tyrion said,
"A harrowing tale. I'm sorry."
The eunuch sighed.
"You are sorry, but you do not believe me." "No, my lord, no need to apologize. I was drugged and in pain, but it was a very long time ago and far across the sea. No doubt I dreamed that voice. I've told myself as much 1,000 times.
I believe in steel swords, gold coins, and men's wits," said Tyrion. "And I believe there once were dragons.
I've seen their skulls after all. Let us hope that that is the worst thing you ever see, my lord. On that we agree, Tyrion smiled. And for Sir Courtney's death, well, we know Stannis hired cell sails from the free cities. Perhaps he bought himself a skilled assassin as well. A very skilled assassin. There are such. I used to dream that one day I'd be rich enough to send a faceless man after my sweet sister. Regardless of how Sir Courtney died, said Varys, he is dead. The castle fallen. Stannis is free to march. Any chance we might convince the Dornish men to descend on the marches? Asked Tyrion. None. A pity. Well, the threat may serve to keep the marcher lords close to their castles, at least. What news of my father? If Lord Tywin has won across the Red Fork, no word has reached me yet. If he does not hasten, he may be trapped between his foes. The Oakheart Leaf and the Rowan Tree have been seen north of the Mander. No word from Littlefinger? Perhaps he never reached Bitter Bridge. Or perhaps he's died there. Lord Tarly has seized Renly's stores and put a great many to the sword. Florence chiefly. Lord Caswell has shut himself up in his castle. Tyrion threw back his head and laughed. Varys reined up, nonplussed. My lord? Don't you see the jest, Lord Varys? Tyrion waved a hand at the shuttered windows at all the sleeping city. Storm's End is fallen, and Stannis is coming with fire and steel, and the guards alone know what dark powers. And the good folk don't have Jaime to protect them, nor Robert, nor Renly, nor Rhaegar, nor their precious Knight of Flowers. Only me, the one they hate. He laughed again. The dwarf, the evil counselor, the twisted little monkey demon. I'm all that stands between them and chaos. Catelyn. Tell father I have gone to make him proud. Her brother swung up into his saddle, every inch the lord in his bright mail and flowing mud and water cloak. A silver trout ornamented the crest of his great helm, twin to the one painted on his shield. He was always proud of you, Edmure, and he loves you, fiercely. Believe that. I mean to give him better reason than mere birth. He wheeled his warhorse about and raised a hand. Trumpet sounded. A drum began to boom. The drawbridge descended in fits and starts, and Sir Edmure Tully led his men out from River Run with lances raised and banners streaming. I have a greater host than yours, brother, Catelyn thought as she watched them go. A host of doubts and fears. Beside her, Brienne's misery was almost palpable. Catelyn had ordered garments sewn to her measure, handsome gowns to suit her birth and sex. Yet still she preferred to dress in oddments of mail and boiled leather, a sword belt cinched around her waist. She would have been happier riding to war with Edmure, no doubt. But even walls as strong as River Run's required swords to hold them. Her brother had taken every able-bodied man for the fords, leaving Sir Desmond Grell to command a garrison made up of the wounded, the old, and the sick, along with a few squires and some untrained peasant boys still shy of manhood. This to defend a castle crammed full of women and children. When the last of Edmure's foot had shuffled under the portcullis, Brienne asked, What shall we do now, my lady? Our duty. Catelyn's face was drawn as she started across the yard. I have always done my duty, she thought. Perhaps that was why her lord father had always cherished her best of all his children. Her two older brothers had both died in infancy, so she had been son as well as daughter to Lord Huster until Edmure was born.
Then her mother had died, and her father had told her that she must be the Lady of River Run now, and she had done that too. And when Lord Hoster promised her to Brandon Stark, she had thanked him for making her such a splendid match. I gave Brandon my favor to wear, and never comforted Petyr once after he was wounded, nor bid him farewell when Father sent him off. And when Brandon was murdered, and Father told me I must wed his brother, I did so, gladly, though I never saw Ned's face until our wedding day. I gave my maidenhood to this solemn stranger, and sent him off to his war, and his king, and the woman who bore him his bastard, because I always did my duty. Her steps took her to the Sept, a seven-sided sandstone temple set amidst her mother's gardens, and filled with rainbow light. It was crowded when they entered. Catelyn was not alone in her need for prayer. She knelt before the painted marble image of the warrior and lit a scented candle for Edmure and another for Rob off beyond the hills. Keep them safe and help them to victory, she prayed, and bring peace to the souls of the slain and comfort to those they leave behind. The Septon entered with his censer and crystal while she was at her prayers, so Catelyn lingered for the celebration. She did not know this Septon, an earnest young man close to Edmure's age. He performed his office well enough, and his voice was rich and pleasant when he sang the praises to the Seven, but Catelyn found herself yearning for the thin, quavering tones of Septon Osmond, long dead. Osmond would have listened patiently to the tale of what she had seen and felt in Renly's pavilion, and he might have known what it meant as well, and what she must do to lay to rest the shadows that stalked her dreams. Osmond, my father, Uncle Brynden, old Maester Kim, they always seem to know everything, but now there is only me, and it seems I know nothing, not even my duty. How can I do my duty if I do not know where it lies? Catelyn's knees were stiff by the time she rose, though she felt no wiser. Perhaps she would go to the Godswood tonight and pray to Ned's gods as well. They were older than the Seven. Outside, she found a song of a different sort. Ryman the Rhymer sat by the brewhouse amidst a circle of listeners, his deep voice ringing as he sang of Lord Derrimond at the Bloody Meadow. And there he stood with sword in hand, the last of Derry's ten. Brian paused to listen for a moment, broad shoulders hunched and thick arms crossed against her chest. A mob of ragged boys raced by, screeching and flailing at each other with sticks. Why do boys so love to play at war? Catelyn wondered if Raymond was the answer. The singer's voice swelled as he neared the end of his song. And red the grass beneath his feet, and red his banners bright, and red the glow of setting sun that bathed him in its light. Come on, the great lord called. My sword is hungry still, and with a cry of savage rage, they swarmed across the rill.
Fighting is better than this waiting, Brian said. You don't feel so helpless when you fight. You have a sword and a horse, sometimes an axe. When you're armored, it's hard for anyone to hurt you.
Knights die in battle, Catelyn reminded her. Brian looked at her with those blue and beautiful eyes.
As ladies die in childbed. No one sings songs about them.
Children are a battle of a different sort. Catelyn started to cross the yard. A battle without banners or war horns, but no less fierce. Carrying a child, bringing it into the world. Your mother will have told you of the pain.
I never knew my mother, Brian said. My father had ladies, a different lady every year, but...
Those were no ladies, Catelyn said. As hard as birth can be, Brian, what comes after is even harder. At times I feel as though I'm being torn apart. Would that there were five of me, one for each child, so I might keep them all safe.
And who would keep you safe, my lady?
Her smile was wan and tired. Why, the men of my house.
or so my lady mother taught me. My lord father, my brother, my uncle, my husband, they will keep me safe. But while they are away from me, I suppose you must fill their place, Brian. Brian bowed her head. I shall try, my lady. Later that day, Maester Wyman brought a letter. She saw him at once, hoping for some word from Rob or from Sir Roderick in Winterfell, but the message proved to be from one Lord Meadows, who named himself Castellan of Storm's End. It was addressed to her father, her brother, her son, or whoever now holds Riverrun. Sir Courtney Penrose was dead, the man wrote, and Storm's End had opened its gates to Stannis Baratheon, the true-born and rightful heir. The castle garrison had sworn their swords to his cause, one and all, and no man of them had suffered harm. Save Courtney Penrose, Catelyn murmured. She had never met the man, yet she grieved to hear of his passing. Rob should know this at once, she said. Do we know where he is? At last word, he was marching toward the Crag, the seat of House Westerling, said Maester Wyman. If I dispatched a raven to Ashmark, it may be they could send a rider after him. Do so. Catelyn read the letter again after the maester was gone. Lord Meadows says nothing of Robert's bastard, she confided to Brian. I suppose he yielded the boy with the rest, though I confess I do not understand why Stannis wanted him so badly. Perhaps he fears the boy's claim. A bastard's claim? No, it's something else. What does this child look like?
He is 7 or 8, comely, with black hair and bright blue eyes. Visitors oft thought him Lord Renly's own son.
And Renly favoured Robert. Catelyn had a glimmer of understanding. Stannis means to parade his brother's bastard before the realm, so men might see Robert in his face and wonder why there's no such likeness in Joffrey.
Would that mean so much?
Those who favour Stannis will call it proof. Those who support Joffrey will say it means nothing. Her own children had more Tully about them than Stark. Arya was the only one to show much of Ned in her features. And Jon Snow. But he was never mine. She found herself thinking of Jon's mother, that shadowy secret love her husband would never speak of. Does she grieve for Ned, as I do? Or did she hate him for leaving her bed for mine? Does she pray for her son as I have prayed for mine? They were uncomfortable thoughts and futile. If John had been born of a Shara Dane of Starfall, as some whispered, the lady was long dead. If not, Catelyn had no clue who or where his mother might be. And it made no matter. Ned was gone now, and his loves and his secrets had all died with him. Still, she was struck again by how strangely men behaved when it came to their bastards. Ned had always been fiercely protective of John, and Sir Courtney Penrose had given up his life for this Edric Storm. Yet Roose Bolton's bastard had meant less to him than one of his dogs. To judge from the tone of the queer, cold letter Edmure had gotten from him not 3 days past. He had crossed the Trident and was marching on Harrenhal as commander. He wrote, "A strong castle and well garrisoned, but his grace shall have it, if I must kill every living soul within to make it so." He hoped his grace would weigh that against the crimes of his bastard son, whom Sir Roderick Castell had put to death. "A fate he no doubt earned," Bolton had written. "Tainted blood is ever treacherous, and Ramsay's nature was sly, greedy, and cruel. I count myself well rid of him. The true-born sons my young wife has promised me would never have been safe while he lived." The sound of hurrying footsteps drove the morbid thoughts from her head. Sir Desmond Squire dashed panting into the room and knelt.
"My lady, Lannisters, across the river."
"Take a long breath, lad, and tell it slowly." He did as she bid.
"A column of armored men," he reported, "across the Red Fork. They are flying a purple unicorn below the line of Lannister. Some son of Lord Brax."
Brax had come to Riverrun once when she was a girl, to propose wedding one of his sons to her or Lysa. She wondered whether it was this same son out there now, leading the attack. The Lannisters had ridden out of the southeast beneath a blaze of banners, Sir Desmond told her, when she ascended to the battlements to join him. A few outriders, no more, he assured her. The main strength of Lord Tywin's host is well to the south. We are in no danger here. South of the Red Fork, the land stretched away open and flat. From the watchtower, Catelyn could see for miles. Even so, only the nearest ford was visible. Edmure had entrusted Lord Jason Mannister with its defense, as well as that of three others farther upriver. The Lannister riders were milling about uncertainly, near the water, crimson and silver banners flapping in the wind. No more than 50, my lady, Sir Desmond estimated. Catelyn watched the riders spread out in a long line. Lord Jason's men waited to receive them behind rocks and grass and hillocks. A trumpet blast sent the horsemen forward at a ponderous walk, splashing down into the current. For a moment they made a brave show, all bright armor and streaming banners, the sun flashing off the points of their lances. No, she heard Brienne mutter. It was hard to make out what was happening, but the screams of the horses seemed loud even at this remove. And beneath them, Catelyn heard the fainter clash of steel on steel. A banner vanished suddenly as its bearer was swept under. And soon after, the first dead man drifted past their walls, borne along by the current. By then, the Lannisters had pulled back in confusion. She watched as they reformed, conferred briefly, and galloped back the way they had come. The men on the wall shouted taunts after them, though they were already too far off to hear. Sir Desmond slapped his belly. Would that Lord Hoster could have seen that. It would have made him dance. My father's dancing days are past, I fear, Catelyn said, and this fight is just begun. The Lannisters will come again. Lord Tywin has twice my brother's numbers.
He could have 10 times, and it would not matter, Sir Desmond said. The west bank of the Red Fork is higher than the east, my lady, and well wooded. Our bowmen have good cover and a clear feel for the shafts.
And should any breach occur, Edmure will have his best knights in reserve, ready to ride wherever they are most sorely needed. The river will hold them. I pray you are right, Catelyn said gravely. That night they came again. She had commanded them to wake her at once if the enemy returned, and well after midnight, a serving girl touched her gently by the shoulder. Catelyn sat up at once. What is it?
The ford again, my lady.
Wrapped in a bedrobe, Catelyn climbed to the roof of the keep. From there, she could see over the walls and the moonlit river to where the battle raged. The defenders had built watchfires along the bank, and perhaps the Lannisters thought to find them night-blind or unwary. If so, it was folly. Darkness was a chancy ally at best. As they waded in to breast their way across, men stepped in hidden pools and went down splashing, while others stumbled over stones or gashed their feet on the hidden caltrops. The Malister bowmen sent a storm of fire arrows hissing across the river, strangely beautiful from afar. One man, pierced through a dozen times, his clothes afire, danced and whirled in the knee-deep water until at last he fell and was swept downstream. By the time his body came bobbing past River Run, the fires and his life had both been extinguished. A small victory, Catelyn thought when the fighting had ended and the surviving foemen had melted back into the night. Yet a victory nonetheless. As they descended the winding turret steps, Catelyn asked Brienne for her thoughts.
That was the brush of Lord Tywin's fingertip, my lady, the girl said. He is probing, feeling for a weak point, an undefended crossing. If he does not find one, he will curl all his fingers into a fist and try and make one.
Brienne hunched her shoulders.
That's what I do, where I am.
Her hand went to the hilt of her sword and gave it a little pat as if to make certain it was still there. And may the gods help us then, Catelyn thought. Yet there was nothing she could do for it.
That was Edmure's battle out there on the river. Hers was here inside the castle. The next morning, as she broke her fast, she sent for her father's aged steward, Uthryde's Wain. Have Sir Cleos Frey brought a flagon of wine. I mean to question him soon, and I want his tongue well loosened.
As you command, my lady.
Not long after, a rider with a Malastar eagle sewn on his breast arrived with a message from Lord Jason, telling of another skirmish and another victory. Sir Flemont Brax had tried to force a crossing at a different ford 6 leagues to the south. This time, the Lannisters shortened their lances and advanced across the river behind on foot. But the Malastar bowmen had rained high arcing shots down over their shields, while the scorpions Edmure had mounted on the riverbank sent heavy stones crashing through to break up the formation. They left a dozen dead in the water, only two reaching the shallows, where we dealt with them briskly, the rider reported. He also told of fighting farther upstream, where Lord Carl Vance held the fords. Those thrust too were turned aside, at grievous cost to our foes. Perhaps Edmure was wiser than I knew, Catelyn thought. His lords all saw the sense in his battle plans. Why was I so blind? My brother is not the little boy I remember, no more than Rob is. She waited until evening before going to pay her call upon Sir Cleos Frey, reasoning that the longer she delayed, the drunker he was likely to be. As she entered the tower cell, Sir Cleos stumbled to his knees.
My lady, I knew not of any escape. The imp said a Lannister must needs have a Lannister escort, on my oath, as a knight.
Arise, sir. Catelyn seated herself. I know no grandson of Walder Frey would be an oathbreaker, unless it served his purpose. You brought peace terms, my brother said.
I did.
Sir Cleos lurched to his feet. She was pleased to see how unsteady he was. Tell me, she commanded, and he did. When he was done, Catelyn sat frowning. Edmure had been right. These were no terms at all, except
Lannister will exchange Arya and Sansa for his brother?
Yes. He sat on the Iron Throne and swore it.
Before witnesses?
Before all the court, my lady, and the gods as well. I said as much to Sir Edmure, but he told me it was not possible, that his Grace Rob would never consent.
He told you true. She could not even say that Rob was wrong. Arya and Sansa were children. The Kingslayer, alive and free, was as dangerous as any man in the realm. That road led nowhere. Did you see my girls? Are they well treated? Sir Cleos hesitated.
Yes, they seemed...
He is fumbling for a lie, Catelyn realized, but the wine has fuddled his wits. Sir Cleos, she said coolly, you forfeited the protection of your peace banner when your men played us false. Lie to me, and you'll hang from the walls beside them. Believe that. I shall ask you once more. Did you see my daughters? His brow was damp with sweat.
I saw Sansa at the court, the day Tyrion told me his terms. She looked most beautiful, my lady, perhaps a bit, drawn, as it were.
Sansa, but not Arya.
That might mean anything. Arya had always been harder to tame. Perhaps Cersei was reluctant to parade her in open court for fear of what she might say or do. They might have her locked safely out of sight.
Or they might have killed her.
Catelyn shoved the thought away. His terms, you said? Yet Cersei is Queen Regent.
Tyrion spoke for both of them. The Queen was not there. She was indisposed that day, I was told.
Curious. Catelyn thought back to that terrible trek through the Mountains of the Moon, and the way Tyrion Lannister had somehow seduced that sellsword from her service to his own. The dwarf is too clever by half. She could not imagine how he had survived the high road after Lysa had sent him from the Vale, yet it did not surprise her. He had no part in Ned's murder, at the least, and he came to my defense when the clansmen attacked us. If I could trust his word. She opened her hands to look down at the scars across her fingers. His dagger marks, she reminded herself. His dagger, in the hand of the killer he paid to open Bran's throat. Though the dwarf denied it, to be sure. Even after Lysa locked him in one of her sky cells and threatened him with a moon door, he had still denied it. He lied, she said, rising abruptly. The Lannisters are liars, every one, and the dwarf is the worst of them. The killer was armed with his own knife. Sir Cleos stared.
I know nothing of any...
You know nothing, she agreed, sweeping from the cell. Brienne fell in beside her, silent. It is simpler for her, Catelyn thought, with a pang of envy. She was like a man in that. For men, the answer was always the same, and never farther away than the nearest sword. For a woman, a mother, the way was stonier and harder to know. She took a late supper in the great hall with her garrison to give them what encouragement she could. Rhyman the Rhymer sang through all the courses, sparing her the need to talk. He closed with a song he had written about Rob's victory at Oxcross. And the stars in the night were the eyes of the wolves, and the wind itself was their song. Between the verses, Rhyman threw back his head and howled, and by the end, half of the hall was howling along with him. Even Desmond Grell, who was well in his cups. Their voices rang off the rafters. Let them have their songs, if it makes them brave, Catelyn thought, toying with her silver goblet.
There was always a singer at Evenfall Hall when I was a girl, Brienne said quietly. I learned all the songs by heart.
Sansa did the same, though few singers ever cared to make the long journey north to Winterfell. I told her there would be singers at the King's Court, though. I told her she would hear music of all sorts, that her father could find some master to help her learn the high harp. Oh, gods, forgive me. Brienne said,
I remember a woman. She came from some place across the narrow sea. I could not even say what language she sang in, but her voice was as lovely as she was. She had eyes the color of plums, and her waist was so tiny my father could put his hands around it. His hands were almost as big as mine.
She closed her long, thick fingers as if to hide them. Did you sing for your father? Catelyn asked. Brienne shook her head, staring down at her trencher as if to find some answer in the gravy. For Lord Renly? The girl reddened.
Never, His fool made cruel japes sometimes, and I...
Someday you must sing for me.
Please, I have no gift.
Brienne pushed back from the table.
Forgive me, my lady. Do I have your leave to go?
Catelyn nodded. The tall, ungainly girl left the hall with long strides, almost unnoticed amidst the revelry. May the gods go with her, she thought, as she returned listlessly to her supper. It was 3 days later when the hammer blow that Brienne had foretold fell, and 5 days before they heard of it. Catelyn was sitting with her father when Edmure's messenger arrived. The man's armor was dinted, his boots dusty, and he had a ragged hole in his surcoat, but the look on his face as he knelt was enough to tell her that the news was good.
Victory, my lady!
He handed her Edmure's letter. Her hand trembled as she broke the seal. Lord Tywin had tried to force a crossing at a dozen different fords, her brother wrote, but every thrust had been thrown back. Lord Lefford had been drowned, the Crakehall knight called Strongbore taken captive, Sir Adam Marbrand thrice forced to retreat. But the fiercest battle had been fought at Stone Mill, where Sir Gregor Clegane had led the assault. So many of his men had fallen that their dead horses threatened to dam the flow. In the end, the mountain and a handful of his best had gained the west bank, but Edmure had thrown his reserves at them, and they had shattered and reeled back bloody and beaten. Sir Gregor himself had lost his horse and staggered back across the Red Fork, bleeding from a dozen wounds, while a rain of arrows and stones fell all around him.
They shall not cross, Cat, Edmure scrawled. Lord Tywin is marching to the southeast. A feint, perhaps, or full retreat, it matters not. They shall not cross. Sir Desmond grinned.